Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Retro Raw Rundown here on Inside the Ropes. We're covering the June 29th episode of Raw is War, the night after King of the Ring. A ton of stuff happened, so we're not going to be shy of stuff to talk about.
There's a lot. There's so much.
I'm Kenny, I'm joined by Sondra. Hi Sondra, how are you?
Hi Kenny. I don't even know how to start with this episode of Retro Raw. Like, there's just so much.
I think I've worked it out of, like, what WWF seemed to do in 1998, which is, like, the night after a pay-per-view, they give you, like, 100 new things.
Yeah, they really do.
Like, 100 new things the night after a pay-per-view.
Yep, pretty much. It's just like, here's a bunch of chaos, here's a bunch of weird shit, have a brawl for all, guys.
The brawl for all is finally here.
I'm so excited to talk about the... Like, part of me is so excited to talk about the brawl for all. Part of me is worried to talk about the brawl for all because I think people are really expecting me to, like, have these reactions. And, like, I knew what the brawl for all was. And, like, I do know who wins it. But watching it in real time unfold before my eyes was a sight to see, for sure.
I've not watched the brawl for all in any way since it was on. So it'll be interesting to see my reaction to it now, as opposed to what it was in 1998.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I've never watched it. I've just heard coverage of it, I'll say. And like, I do know who wins, and I know... It's so bizarre, but we'll get there.
I do just want to say something we did not cover on the King of the Ring show, which you can listen to on Patreon. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where we cover King of the Ring 98 at length. Shamrock is King of the Ring, the Hell in a Cell match, the first blood match, and tons more. But on the day of that show, that was the day that Pat Patterson's, like, long-term partner Louie passed away, which is why Patterson was not on King of the Ring. After King of the Ring, sorry, was not on this show. So
okay,
that's
that
why.
Makes sense. That's too bad.
So let's kick off with this bonkers fucking show. So what number is this if people are watching along with us in the network again?
This is number 266 from 266. June 29, 1998.
There we go. 266, June 29, 1998. So we kick off the show with some still shots of the King of the Ring with JR and Lawler commentating it as Kane's the new champion. We kick off the show with a red carpet covering the ring. There's a WWF title on a pedestal under glass. We have Vince McMahon, Sergeant Slaughter, and Gerald Briscoe smiling with glee. Jim Ross does say that Pat Patterson's not here and they send their best wishes to him, which obviously was for the death of his long-term partner. But tonight, they will present the WWF Championship to someone other than Stone Cold Steve Austin. And Vince McMahon goes on to kind of praise Kane about how great he is, how much of a role model he is for the championship.
Which, like, what even? In what universe is Kane a role model? Like, Kane, a role model.
Well, you know, Kane, you know, he turned up in the WWF and he set people on fire.
He did. He definitely did that.
He righted a wrong of him and his brother in his eyes.
In his eyes, yep. I mean, Vince is talking about how he cleansed the WWF of the foul mouth, of, like, the hand gestures, the beer swilling, all of that, that Kane has cleansed the WWF. And he's like, Kane, whose lips have never tasted an alcoholic beverage. And, like, I'm suspicious about that because I thought he was meant to be drinking that night that he was out with Katie Vick, so I just don't know if that's true. But
I mean, that's unfair for you to take information you find out later on and use it at this point.
I'm just saying. But just the idea of Kane as a role model when all he does is set people on fire.
It's there. But he brings out Kane, the new World Wrestling Federation champion, led with Paul Bearer, who looks like he has never been happier in his life. Paul Bearer goes on about how hard a life Kane has had to endure week after week, watching superstars become... superstars, watching his brother become a WWE superstar. After tonight, The Undertaker will finally stand in Kane's shadow. And as Vince is about to put the championship around Kane's waist, we of course hear the glass break, and here comes Stone Cold Steve Austin. He grabs the microphone away from Commissioner Slaughter, and tonight he wants a rematch with Kane. Stone Cold says that Vince should show some guts and grant him the match, and Vince says Austin can have the match if Paul Bearer agrees to it. Paul Bearer does not look like he wants to piss off Stone Cold Steve Austin. Paul Bearer at one point looks like he has shat himself.
Yep.
Which is a hard look to pull off. But he does.
It really is. Like, I love Paul Bearer here. I think Paul Bearer is the star of this show. I think he is so excellent. Like, talking about how, you know, no one can understand what this momentous occasion means to my son and me this evening. And it's a place where dreams can come true. And, like, Paul Bearer is talking about, like, I was there for 20 long years with my son, but, like, also you sort of kidnapped him. So it's disturbing, but kind of great that you were there for him, I guess, even though he was your captive in a basement.
There's a lot to unpack.
And there's a lot to unpack there.
Austin is trying to get Bearer to agree to the rematch, and then Paul Bearer eventually says that Austin can have the rematch if Kane will do it. And then Austin mentions that it was The Undertaker who busted him open with a chair shot, not Kane. His big brother was the one that beat Austin, handed the WWF title to Kane. Very clever. And that starts to eat away at Kane a little bit. Austin needles him until finally Kane nods his head, grants Austin a rematch. Austin flips off Vince. Vince is going nuts. Paul Bearer shat himself again. And we are off for the night. And I just thought this opening segment was excellent. It was everybody played their part really well. And I think if you were watching it at the time, it was chaos. And I think if you were watching this, I don't think this segment made you in any way desire to switch over to Nitro.
No, I don't think it made me desire to switch over. I mean, I never desire to switch over to Nitro, but, you know.
If you ever want to, Sandra, we can double up and do that.
I have zero intention of doing that ever in my life. But I mean, maybe I'll watch like a segment of Sid as the Millennium Man, because that sounds kind of amazing. But no, this whole segment was great, and so great for Kane's development as a person, right? Because Paul Bearer is talking about how he had pictures of Undertaker all around and he just wanted to be like Undertaker. And I thought, no, don't be like Undertaker, be better. And then Paul Bearer, immediately after I wrote this down in my notes, goes, you can be better than your brother or something like that. I was like, yes. But yeah, this was awesome. And I mean, Stone Cold Steve Austin kind of goading Kane into the rematch by virtue of saying like, I want you to, you know, like, are you as good as your brother? Can you beat me? Could you have beaten Steve Austin fair and square? And of course, Kane is going to accept the rematch. And of course, he's going to accept the challenge because he wants to prove that he is better than his brother, or at least on the Undertaker's level, because that's all Kane wants is the love of his brother. And it's just so sweet, Kenny. Kane is a very sympathetic character to me, and not just because I know of like current Kane. I really feel like 1998 Kane is very sympathetic. You can tell that he's being controlled by Paul Bearer, and he just, you know, he's motivated by family and stuff. And like, he's a good and kind person at heart, even when he's misguided and tries to kidnap people and set them on fire. And like, we won't go into things that happen in a couple years that might make me question that, but still.
We then find out after the break, Jerry Lawler says the Undertaker's going to be here tonight to make a confession. And we get what the announcers call the Brawl for It All.
They keep saying Brawl for It All. They definitely keep saying that.
And that's not the case. We get Darren Drozdov coming out, though. And
did you notice the sign in the crowd that said, Rock, quit cooking that rock?
1998.
What does
marijuana.
That even mean?
I don't know. I have no idea.
I was like, is that a reference to something? Like, I understand smell what the rock is cooking is this catchphrase, but Rock, quit cooking that rock.
Is he cooking himself?
I don't know. That's what I was wondering.
Is it a drug reference that we don't get?
Maybe. That's what because I was going to ask if it was a drug reference that I just didn't understand.
Because I'm just like, I'm mad for the heroin me. I'd know all about it.
Well, I don't know the references nearly as well.
So Darren Drozdov's out. Who's he going to face? It's Sable. Sable comes out. And she comes out and says, at the request of Mr. McMahon, he has signed a new World Wrestling Federation superstar who Darren Drozdov is going to face. And it is Steven Regal.
So I was trying to like transcribe Sable's speech because I had already commented on her cat suit. By the way, this cat suit, step up. I really enjoyed the metal clasps in the front with the nice scoop back for simplicity. Like, it's a good balance, I feel. So I really enjoyed this one this week. But then I just was like, I don't care what Sable's saying. Steven Regal's here. I'm so excited. I can't. I just don't even have words because I love William Regal so much. And this is his debut. And I'm really excited. And I clearly cared way more about it than commentary did because Steven Regal has debuted and Jerry Lawler is asking Sable about her fucking nails.
I do want to just say, I want you to really temper your expectations here because This is at the point where Regal is very heavily in his drug phase.
Oh, I know. And I know that it's not going to be like the greatest phase of Stephen Regal.
He's not going to be around for long at all.
No.
So just enjoy him, but don't get expecting to be with you too much. But what I want to talk about, which we'll talk about the match in a second, but I have to talk about this because it's just too good. So Sable voluntarily goes to join JR and King for commentary. Commentary.
Sable on commentary is never a good idea.
At the best of times. But then obviously, you know, Jim Ross, being the journalist that he is going to ask Sable some questions about her new contract with Titan Sports and her relationship with Vince McMahon and all that kind of stuff. And she refuses to answer any questions. She seems kind of enamored with Jerry Lawler, even though he clearly is being a creep to her. And I just didn't get it. Why did she go and commentate if she didn't want to say anything?
That was my question, too. I was so annoyed. I officially did not like Sable here at all. She was so frustrating because she's just like, unfortunately, I am unable to discuss the details of my arrangement with Vince McMahon. And that's like the most she says. She just keeps going, no comment. Unfortunately, I can't talk about that right now. And nobody's paying attention to the match. Like, Regal's using his forearm against Draws' face, and it's great, and he's being Regal, and I love him. And, you know, and then JR's like, do you have any predictions about Austin Kane? She's just like, I'm going to keep all my predictions to myself. Like, I get if she can't talk about her relationship with Vince McMahon or Titan Sports or her contract or whatever. Like, those are professional details that might be confidential. That's fine.
Maybe don't go on commentary then.
And then when JR switches tactics and he's like, do you have predictions about Stone Cold Steve Austin and Kane? A wrestling match later on in the show. Like, nothing having to do with your contractual obligation. She's just like, I can't talk about that either. What the fuck? Then why are you on commentary? Why are you out here? Go away, you stupid cow. I don't like you.
In better news, though, Regal does kill Draws.
Yes, he wins with the Regal Stretch, which is not called the Regal Stretch at this point, but he wins with it, and I liked that. And I thought the match was good.
Nobody in the building cared.
Nobody cared at all. Like, I feel like I am the only one that cared about this. And then, at the end, Sable has the fucking audacity, right? They're like, thank you for being here, Sable. She's like, thank you, I enjoyed it. Did you, though? Did you really, Sable?
At least you had a good time, love. At least you enjoyed yourself.
Because you were fucking shite. Like, go away.
And then even when she was done, she didn't know when to leave the booth.
Nope, she just looked confused the whole time.
Although she looked confused, that's progress.
I guess so. I was so angry during this match. I was like, why the fuck do you have Sable on commentary for anything, ever? Much less the debut of Stephen Regal. Which means that obviously because whenever they bring people out for commentary for these types of matches, it just means they don't care about the match and they're trying to get another story over. And it made me sad because Regal's my fave.
We then get Michael Cole introducing the winner of the 1998 King of the Ring, Ken Shamrock, who comes out for, well, I mean, he did a promo. He certainly did a promo. He's lucky. He's lucky that he's as intense as he is because, my God, he is bad at promos.
He is terrible.
He's like, you know, he's putting over The Rock for being a tough guy. So, you know, I've not forgot that you hit me in the face with a chair, but, you know, we've got unfinished business, which is all fine. And then Owen Hart comes out, obviously, because Owen Hart won the 1994 King of the Ring, and he's got issues with Ken Shamrock as well. He wants to fight Shamrock. Shamrock can barely remember what name you call Owen Hart. So he's confused by that. But before that can get any more confusing, Triple H comes out, who is also got issues with Owen Hart, I guess, kind of, and then he's also a former King of the Ring.
Triple H just couldn't resist the opportunity to make gendered insults and be a prick.
Exactly. So he, you know, do we want to find out who the King of Kings is? And will we do a triple threat match? And then Shamrock's like, right, Hunter Hurst.
Yes.
Hart Owen, triple threat. Him. And Triple H's like, oh, you catch on fast. I'm like, to be fair, Triple H could have ripped him far more than he did. So, fair play, but bless Ken Shamrock and words.
Yeah, Ken Shamrock and words are just not that. I mean, he did better on the microphone than Sable. So,
There is that.
But yeah, when he said, you, Hunter Hurst, it reminded me of Heartbreak. Like,
I will heartbreak. So good.
Oh, it's just so good. Yeah, Ken Shamrock's not great at speaking, but he does have crazy eyes, and that's helpful. As soon as Triple H said, like, who's going to be the King of Kings, I was like, fuck. I don't want him to win this match. And I was really, really sure that Triple H was going to win this match. And yeah, like, that's what I thought. I was like, fucking hell, Hunter Hearst Helmsley is going to win this fucking match, and he's going to beat Ken Shamrock, and I'm going to be so angry. And, like, I was all geared up to be super, super mad.
At least you were prepared. Yes. Up next, though, is the debut of the Brawl for All. Not the Brawl for It All.
But they keep saying Brawl for It All.
They do, even though the graphic flashes across the screen saying otherwise.
Yeah.
Danny Hodge has been brought in to referee this match. I wonder who convinced the WWF to do that.
Did you see the sad news about Danny Hodge?
He has been found.
Has he? Okay, yes. Good.
I found him, so it's not as sad now.
That's good.
I'm not here to cast aspersions, but maybe an 86-year-old man with dementia should not have a driving license.
No, not at all. That's a terrible idea. Like, did he have a license, or did he just, like, leave?
Well, he had a car, like, his car.
Yeah. I don't know. It makes me worry for him, because if he has dementia, then he should not be driving. At all. But, like, Danny Hodge is the official here.
He is the official here. And he, at this point, is, like, 66 years old. So he's still looking okay. And
he's adorable.
He is adorable. So we're getting Mark Merrow versus Steve Blackman in this first Brawl for All match. Now, initially, I'd forgotten about who won this, and I was like, oh, well, I guess Merrow might win if he's, like, done a bunch of boxing. But Steve Blackman just keeps doing takedowns, and that wins him the fight. And you can see Merrow's getting more and more kind of, like, pissed that he's not getting anywhere. And the fans start booing. I think at one point they start chanting bullshit at the match.
They start chanting, "We want wrestling."
Yeah, and it's more boring than I remember it being. And Steve Blackman wins, and it was a disaster. It was terrible. Mark Merrow, for whatever reason, babyfaces himself at the end and hugs Blackman. Don't know why.
I don't really understand any of this. Like,
here's my prediction. Sondra will love the Brawl for All.
Oh,
go ahead.
I already love the Brawl for All. I 100% love the Brawl for All. I'm all in for it. Because it is terrible. But, so, what I don't understand is, okay, so one of my least favorite things, and this has been an issue throughout 97, 98, right, Kenny? You know that I don't love when things are happening on a wrestling program and then someone comes out to tell me, oh, that thing you were just watching is fake, but this is real. So I hate the
fact.
You
don't like
No, I don't. And I don't like the fact that this is like, you know, oh, that wrestling that you watch most of the time is fake, but this is totally real. And this is a different system of fighting. And you can use boxing and wrestling. And, you know, they keep talking about, I don't remember if it's in this match or if it's later on, but I know Lawler says something like, you know, oh, this is such an innovative thing. It's a mixture. You can use wrestling and you can use boxing. And I'm like, that, have you heard of MMA? Like, have you heard of where you got Ken Shamrock and Dan Severn? Like, that's already going on. So it's not innovative. It's like shit MMA. So it's not even doing MMA well, you know? Like, it's the crap version of MMA where it's just like they're counting punches and takedowns and nobody's really doing a whole lot, and it doesn't make any sense. And Mark Merrow looked terrible in this match. Like, I only watch UFC, like, very casually, right? I don't watch a lot of MMA. I am not skilled in what is good boxing or what is good, like, amateur wrestling, right? Like, I watch professional wrestling, and it's scripted, and it's lovely, and that's the way I like things. And I do watch fights sometimes, and I enjoy them. So it's not like I'm opposed to watching fights or, you know, shoot fighting or anything like that, but just this did not seem like that. This seemed bad. And Mark Merrow just kind of looked confused the whole time, and Steve Blackman just kept taking him down, and I was like, Blackman looks way better. Like, as they explain the rules to me, you get takedowns and you get points, and you get punches and you get points, and Steve Blackman got all of the points, basically. And I don't blame the crowd for being bored, because they came to see a professional wrestling show. They did not come to see the Brawl for It All. They came to see, you know, scripted fighting and fun and good moves.
Also, it's not like they were warned that this was coming.
No, this is just coming out of nowhere. It's not like, because did they advertise the fact that there was going to be a Brawl for All at all?
No, not at all. Just like, nope.
this is just a thing that's happening on your wrestling program now. And it's like, well, this is not what I came here for.
There was no advertisement for it. It was just, here you go.
It's so random. Like, I wish that I didn't know that this was coming, and I wish that I didn't know what happened, just because then I would have been like, what the fuck? Because I've been waiting for it. I knew it happened in 1998, and we're in the back half of 1998 now, so I'm like, when's it gonna happen? It's terrible. It's 100% terrible. I'm so into it because no one looks like they know what they're doing, and they all just look confused. And, I mean, Blackman just keeps getting takedowns, and that's it. JR does say something at one point, and it reminded me of when Mike Tyson was facing up against Stone Cold Steve Austin. Not that Steve Blackman and Mark Miro have anything to do with that, but he says something about how a good wrestler will always beat a good boxer. And I just thought it was interesting that JR was still trying to put over wrestling in the context of this absolute cesspool.
It was a thing. It really was a thing. And we then got a Slam of the Week sponsored by Skittles, where we saw China DDT and Owen Hart to help Sean Waltman beat him. And then, Sandra, Kevin Kelly has grown a goatee.
He has. I don't think it's a good look for him.
It's edgy.
Apparently so. What, did he go to the Mirror Universe or something? Is this Mirror Universe Kevin Kelly?
I mean, he didn't have one last week. That's very long time. I mean, I couldn't grow a goatee in a week.
Me neither, but, you know.
Well, anyway. he speaks to
but
Kane.
But Kevin Kelly, being the intrepid reporter.
Speaking to Kane, Kane pulls out his voice box and says that he can beat Stone Cold Steve Austin again because he's a braver champion than The Undertaker ever was. And as Kane goes to rush away, Paul Bearer goes after him. And then we've got Mankind, who looks absolutely fine, after being in Hell in a Cell the night before, is just awkwardly standing there with Kevin Kelly. How is he fighting?
What is he doing here? Why is he here?
How does
I
he
don't
look
understand.
Fine? He doesn't look in any way injured.
I mean, he clearly is. He clearly is injured. We saw the things that happened to him yesterday, but he's just, I mean, maybe it's just that Mankind always looks kind of mental, and he always kind of, like, walks with a limp anyway. So I guess there's that. So he doesn't look any worse off than normal Mankind. But still, what the fuck is he doing here? Go home, get some rest.
Up next, though, we get Val.
But, yeah, I did like this dynamic, though, where Kane was like, you know, I'm going to be a greater champion than my brother ever was. And like, using his voice box that much looked tough for him. Like, it looked like it overexerted him. And then he like kind of walked away, and Paul Bearer's just like, what'd you do that for? And like, Kane is holding Kevin Kelly by the shirt and like threatening him. So again, Kevin Kelly's getting back in the thick of things. Maybe he just needed to grow a confidence goatee to get back on his game.
Maybe I need to grow one. Val Venus versus Dick Togo up next, but that's not the big story of the match, because Dustin Runnels comes to the commentary table and he wants to spread the word of the Lord.
So earlier on, and we will get to Dustin in just a moment, but there was like a man in a parking lot. Oh, we will get to Dustin.
You mean the Undertaker in the parking lot?
It was the Undertaker, right?
Yeah, of course it was.
Right. Because I just thought it was the weirdest camera shot, because they're like, someone's coming up to the building, and I don't know, it's hard to tell who it is. It's pretty dark. I'm like, it's the Undertaker. Obviously, it's the Undertaker. Like, why is this a story? I didn't understand why they were being so, like, shielded about it. It was weird. I didn't like it.
I guess they wanted you to be like, oh, is it somebody else? No, it's not.
It's not. It's the Undertaker. But yeah, so Val Venus versus Dick Togo. Yamaguchi-san's wife is in the front row, apparently, and she does not look happy to be there. Dustin Runnels, Kenny.
He's spreading the word of the Lord. On Raw is War.
I hate this. I hate this so much. Like,
I'll give Dustin a compliment, though. He looked better in his regular clothes than he has in a long time.
Yes. I mean, doesn't it seem like Dustin Runnels found Jesus and got really sad, though? Like, that shouldn't be your message.
He seems like one of those guys who's like, you know, in high school, he'd be like, hey guys, do you want to go play football? And you'd be like, yeah. And then he'd be like, we go for ice cream after? Yeah. Let me tell you about Jesus. Oh, I don't want to hear about Jesus. I want ice cream.
So, I grew up very religious. Like, very religious.
Tell us about the Lord, Sandra.
What?
Tell us about the Lord, Sandra.
I the fact that Dustin Reynolds is out here being an evangelical Christian who wants to interrupt commentary and ask Jerry Lawler if he's a born-again Christian. Jerry Lawler. Like, this just...
See, now, I love this kind of stuff. You love Bro-Fro, I love this.
I hate this so much. It's just... I mean, he comes out there and he's just like, it doesn't make any sense, right? Like, it doesn't make any sense that he's out on commentary and he's just like, I just want to talk to you guys because you have such a great opportunity to spread the word of God. And I'm like, oh my goodness. Like, this is just a mockery of Christianity. And like, was Dustin Reynolds, was he sincere about any of this? Or like, was this?
I don't know. You grew up a Christian, you tell me.
It just came across as, like, such a mockery of Christianity. And, like, because is he supposed to be the heel or the babyface? Or, like, does anyone know? Because it seems like they're making him the heel for, like, wanting to talk about God. But then, like, he's also saying,
I mean,
you know,
some,
like,
people may say that as the heel, to be honest.
No, I know. But, like, and then he's saying, like, if Val Venus doesn't accept the Lord Jesus Christ to come into his heart and save them, well, then, like, his prayers are with him and all this. And maybe this is just way too close to my childhood because that's how we spoke about things. I don't know. I just really hate all of this.
The thing that's a shame.
It makes me very uncomfortable.
The thing that's a shame is, like, I wish this had gone, like, 10 times further and you had, like, Dustin Reynolds around a campfire with children singing about Jesus. That would have been the best. Like, imagine, like, The Undertaker walking past as Dustin Reynolds, like, hey, Undertaker, want to talk about the Lord? And just have him, like, punch him in the face or something. But that would be, I wish it went that far. Sadly, it doesn't. But, you know, you can't win them all.
I want Kane to start the campfire. But... I don't know, like, it's just difficult for me to even, like, analyze this because this is how I grew up. Like, I grew up with people who, I still know people who go to church, like, every Sunday and would definitely, like, agree with Dustin here. And
did they go out during a match with a porn star and a few Japanese guys and go up to ask the raunchy, misogynistic commentator if he's a born-again Christian?
Probably not on air. Probably not on air. In fact, they would probably just talk about these people behind their backs and then pray for their souls. I don't know. But
like the rest of them should. But yeah, but anyway, that
happened. But it's one of those things, like, Dustin, I mean, bless him for going out and evangelizing, I guess. But, like, this makes me very uncomfortable and I don't like it.
Val Venus does get a quick win over Dick Togo in 3 minutes, but then he goes over to flirt.
It did make me laugh, and I really want to give Jerry Lawler props, but... It made me laugh when Lawler got all upset because he's like, there's a match between Val Venus and Dick Togo and I had loads of material and Dustin comes out here talking about the Bible.
Oh, Lawler, classic. But anyway.
And like, is Val Venus meant to be the babyface or the heel or... So
then
right.
He goes to flirt with Yamaguchi-san's wife in the front row.
So the babyface thing to do is to swing your crotch and your penis in a lady's face when she is clearly not having it, and her husband is right there.
And he then slaps Val Venus, and then...
As he should!
Yeah. So
none of this is okay.
Val Venus is attracted to Yamaguchi-san's wife.
Apparently. But, like, you can be attracted to someone and not wave your dick in their face when they're like, no, go away from me.
1998, ladies and gentlemen.
I didn't like it. I didn't like any of this.
Edge is in the balcony, though.
I like him.
It's time for the war zone.
I just don't understand what Dustin's deal is.
You've moved on now. Why are you going back
no,
to
I
him?
I haven't, because I'm still angry. Okay.
How can you be angry at that? How could it? Dustin Rhodes been like, hey, can we talk about Jesus make you angry? You watched the Brawl for All.
I know, but the Brawl for All is the fun kind of shitty.
Ken Shamrock, Owen Hart, and Triple H in a triple threat match. It's not too bad. It's pretty fun at points. Owen Hart is very good. Ken Shamrock is very intense. Hunter is trying to keep up. And near the end, Owen and China get in an argument on the floor. Shamrock gets involved. Then out comes The Rock, who hits Triple H with the IC title. Owen gets pulled off the apron into the guardrail, which allows Ken Shamrock to walk right in and just cover Hunter. and become the King of Kings in about 10 minutes. And afterwards, DX and The Nation start fighting on the ramp while Owen and Shamrock are fighting in the ring. Owen does the ring post figure four until referees make him stop, and that's the end. It was a lot of stuff at the end there.
A lot of stuff at the end, a lot of chaos at the end. I thought the match itself was fine. I think I was expecting it to be better, but then I remember that Triple H is in the match, and so then it made sense why it wasn't. It was fun. But the chaos at the end was a good time, I guess. Like, I did not expect Ken Shamrock to win. Like I said, as soon as Triple H said, who's going to be crowned King of Kings, I was like, oh, great. Well, it's going to be Triple H, because then that catchphrase is going to start and ruin my soul. But it didn't. Ken Shamrock won, and Ken Shamrock is the King of Kings, so I don't really know why Triple H calls himself that now. But I was glad. I'm glad to see Ken Shamrock doing things. I'm glad to see Ken Shamrock doing well for himself. Owen Hart puts the figure four on Ken Shamrock after the, you know, around the ring post because he's angry. And I just don't understand why Owen Hart is so angry at Ken Shamrock when Owen Hart turned on Ken Shamrock to begin with, to, you know, begin his metamorphosis into Danger Singlet Man. And he just kind of keeps trying to break Ken Shamrock's ankle now just because he's a dick or something. Like, Ken Shamrock hasn't really done anything to Owen Hart to make him that upset, has he?
Not yet.
Because, like, Owen Hart was mad at other people. Owen Hart should have been mad at Triple H, not Ken Shamrock. Triple H is the one that screwed him over, which is why, like, I really want... I still, every time I see Owen Hart and Triple H together, I'm like, no, I want Owen to win so badly. Ah! Like, Ken Shamrock is really the only babyface in this match, so it was kind of nice to see him win. And, you know, there's Nation and DX shenanigans and all this stuff, and I was kind of wondering where China was in the whole attack, but maybe she was tending to Triple H or something because he was still knocked out. I don't know. But it was fine. It was fun. And Ken Shamrock won, and I liked that.
There was
a random bell ringing in the middle of it for reasons.
Yeah, I don't know what that was all about. We get The Undertaker up next door for his confession. Michael Cole's in the ring with him, asking him why he got involved with Austin and Kane. He says he got involved because he wasn't going to let his little brother set himself on fire, so he did what he had to do. Cole says, well, you know, you cost Austin the WWF title, but Undertaker responds that he did what he had to do. Well, Vince has to get involved and tells us that Undertaker did what he did for Kane because he thinks that he can beat Kane for the WWF title and he can't beat Stone Cold Steve Austin. Vince calls Taker the most evil individual the devil ever placed on this earth. And he warns the Undertaker not to interfere in the WWF title match tonight. And with that said, Undertaker kind of heads back to the locker room and we're kind of left with that teaser of will he get involved or will he not? What did you make of the confession?
The confession, it's interesting, right? So, I mean, I don't like The Undertaker, but this is a cool story wrinkle, I guess. The Undertaker is the bad guy here. Like, he seems like the bad guy here, for sure, for me, costing Steve Austin the title. But it is kind of cool that he's like, I didn't want my brother to set himself on fire. I didn't want to lose him. Because there is something powerful about that, right? Like, he thought his brother had died in a fire.
Because the whole story from day one has been, because a lot of times in wrestling now, right, somebody will come out of a pay-per-view and hit somebody and you go, why did they do it? And the explanation is never really that good. Whereas mm-hmm. this explanation was brilliant. It was like, yeah, because Undertaker from day one has not wanted to fight Kane. He didn't want to do it. You know, they even got back together at the Royal Rumble, which was all a ruse, and Kane set him on fire in a casket.
Right.
But
Like you do, family disputes.
And, you know, eventually Undertaker got in the ring and fought him, and then that was that. But, you know, he's still at this point, even though he doesn't like his brother right now, he doesn't want him to set himself on fire, so it makes sense.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's cool that he's like, I think because the fire stipulation was on the table, he was like, I don't want to see my little brother die again, you know, because he already lost his brother once, he thought, and then now he's back in his life. And even though he's like, there's no love lost between me and Kane, but he does point out that that's mostly because of the mind manipulation of Paul Bearer. And I think he still hopes that he and Kane can have a relationship someday going forward. So he wanted Kane to live because if he lost this wrestling match, then the indication was that Kane was going to actually murder himself in a fire. And Undertaker wasn't super cool with that, so he decided to help Kane win the chip. My issue with all of this, and I know that it's a really nitpicky detail, but like when Austin's all like, Kane didn't beat me, the Undertaker beat me, it bothers me because Steve Austin's back was bleeding in the first place in the first blood match, and all of this is like, I don't know, it just sticks in my craw. So like, I'm trying to ignore that fact. I'm trying to ignore the fact that Kane did actually beat Steve Austin, because now I understand why they didn't just stop the match at the first blood, because the whole story is supposed to be that the Undertaker actually beat Steve Austin and Kane didn't, and da 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 da. But it, like, I don't know, because of the logistics and because rules help control the fun, Kenny. It just
all right, Monica. Yeah,
it just kind of gets to me. But
I get why it's there. But I thought the segment was really cool, and I think it's a good layer. And I actually, like, you know, because in my head I'm going, when does the Undertaker Kane stuff stop being a really good story? So it's still a good story, even in June. So it's
a good story. And Vince McMahon is just an utter dickhead, right? Like, just trying to goad the Undertaker and saying, like, oh, you think that you can beat Kane, but you can't beat Stone Cold Steve Austin, which doesn't really make sense, because hasn't Kane beaten the Undertaker more than Stone Cold Steve Austin has beaten the Undertaker?
I think so. Yeah, you're right.
So I don't know. Vince's logic is suspect here. I am with you on that theory that chair shot to the head just completely made Vince McMahon go insane.
Yeah, because see, now that's what it is. Like, that's definitely what it is. He was nothing like that before.
No.
But don't worry, Sandra. We've got more Brawl for All. And I'm very curious here. In the battle, you know, a lot of times, the battle for Sandra's heart. The battle for Sandra's non-heart at all.
The battle for stay away and keep off my TV is what I have written down.
Is Bradshaw and Mark Canterbury, formerly known as Henry Godwin, part of Southern Justice.
It's a fucking Godwin versus Bradshaw. I don't want to see this.
So who did you root for if you had to pick someone that you were rooting for?
I mean, I did not watch all of this match because I needed a beer, and it would be very difficult for me to care any
There's
less about it.
There's takedowns until the third round.
Danny Hodge looked very adorable standing between the two of them.
Bradshaw won by decision.
Right.
Decision of who's less awful, maybe?
I guess. I don't really even know. Like, because nothing really happens. Like, I guess they punch each other a bunch or something. Oh, this is where Lawler's like, this is the first time there's ever been combination combat. It's called mixed martial arts, Jerry Lawler. Like, seriously. The crowd, I believe, started chanting for Goldberg at one point during this match. I can't blame them either. This was terrible. Bradshaw wins. Between a Godwin and a Bradshaw, like, I don't care. Like, I don't care which one goes through. I want them to just not be on my television. Like, the crowd counts down at the end of the round and then cheers because the match is over. And I was definitely with the crowd on this. Because, again, like, it doesn't make any sense. These guys are not great at mixed martial arts or whatever they're trying to do, right? Like, this isn't MMA. This is Brawl for All. And none of them are very good at it because they're not, like, they're not great fighters. I guess some of them have a background in it or whatever, but this isn't what they, this is not their bread and butter.
So then Kevin Kelly promises he's going to ask The Undertaker if he plans to heed Vince McMahon's warning when we come back. Then we get an ad for SummerSlam coming up in 9 weeks. LOD 2000 head out to the ring. JR says that Sunny is feeling under the weather, a.k.a. she's on her way out.
Yep.
LOD 2000...
Do we see Sunny again?
I don't think we do. Maybe we do, but if it is, it's like one more time. I don't think we do.
Okay.
They end up, LOD 2000 go on, you know, things haven't been going their way lately. You know, they're going to, you know, breathe a new bit of life into themselves again, and they're going to bring back Paul Ellering. So Paul Ellering returns to the WWF. He comes out with this.
I got so excited. I was so excited when Animal called out Precious Paul Ellering. And JR, did you catch when JR goes, I thought he was dead? Like, what was that about?
Just popping himself. So Ellering comes out and he's going to be the new manager of it. Well, he's going to manage LOD again, and maybe they're going to go right back to where, you know, to success. But before we can get anywhere, the DOA come out and it said just 8-Ball and Skull. I don't think we actually see Chains ever again, actually. But they come out.
Where did Chains go?
I think they were just like, we don't need three. We can just have two.
Just keep the Nazi twins.
They come out, and then as they get in the apron, Paul Ellering says, please let me introduce my new team, the DOA! And then the DOA start beating up LOD. Paul Ellering starts kicking Animal and Hawk. And DOA now have Paul Ellering in their corner, and he has a Wall Street Journal that he starts hitting the team with.
I did notice the Wall Street Journal right away, so clearly he's always been a fan of reading. So the Authors of Pain thing does make all of the sense in the world.
What did you think of Paul Elling's return and him turning on the Road Warriors to go with EOA?
I feel so bad for LOD. Like, I care about LOD again for the first time in a while. I feel so bad for them. Animal's on the microphone and he's talking about how they've had tough times, but they're reborn with Paul. Like, he's not just their best friend, like, he's their mentor, and they're so happy to have him back, and, you know, they're bringing him back to the World Wrestling Federation, and clearly they think the world of Precious Paul Ellering. They love him. They're like, our team is going to go places again. And then Paul Ellering just turns on them after all of that, after all of that niceness, where he's just like, you know, because, I mean, Paul Ellering's about to speak, and I'm like, oh, why the fuck are DOA here out on their Titan bikes to ruin my life? But it turns out Paul Ellering wanted to ruin my life by teaming with 8-Ball and Skull instead of LOD, and, like, Animal just called Paul their best friend and mentor, and they have had rough times lately. It would be one thing if LOD were, like, they were doing all right, and they were doing great, but no, like, they really need their career to be revitalized at this point. They've had extremely tough times. They've not been doing anything. Sonny has not been a great manager for them. And so I just feel really, really bad for LOD. It made me very sad.
And we're going to get the absolute boredom of DOA versus LOD for a while.
And I'm not excited about that.
Tell me
either.
Now, ladies
like,
and gentlemen.
I
tell
really
me
wish
now.
That, because, like, do I want to see LOD kill DOA? Yes, once, next week, forever. And then not for months.
The only good thing is that Paul Ellering does lose his mind, and that is quite funny.
I'm intrigued to see Paul Ellering because I've only really seen Paul Ellering with the Authors of Pain. I've never seen him with anyone else. And I want to know if he's, like, more involved, because Paul Ellering was, he was very important to the Authors of Pain, but I always just kind of felt like he was the guy in the background and reading a story.
I'm saying nothing. We'll see where it goes.
I know there's something about .com.
I'm not saying it.
In our future. And I'm really excited about it.
Kevin Kelly then asks The Undertaker if he's going to heed the warning of, you know, Vince McMahon. Undertaker says, nobody tells The Undertaker what to do. And then he walks off in a huff.
And for some reason, that just reminded me of Nobody Puts Baby in a Corner from Dirty Dancing. And so then I was imagining The Undertaker doing the lift.
That would be an amazing piece of theater to watch.
Like, that's what I wanted from this segment.
But it's main event time. The WWF Championship's on the line. Kane versus Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin still gets his elbow bandaged due to the staph infection. It's quite a kind of, you know, quick brawl. It goes about 8 minutes. It's all action. Austin's just constantly trying to do everything he can to Kane. Kane's whipping Austin into the guardrail. Paul Bearer ends up at this one point where Paul Bearer hits Austin in the head with his shoe, which is great. Austin escapes the chin lock, runs into a big boot. Kane does a lariat. Austin gets out of it. He runs into a choke slam. Kane sets up for the tombstone, but Austin rolls off his back. Stunner, no, it doesn't happen because Kane sends him off the ropes. But then Kane ends up getting a stunner hit. 1, 2, 3. Austin is the WWF champion again because The Undertaker at this point had made his way down to ringside, which was kind of meant to distract Kane, although it didn't really look like Kane was actually distracted because Kane was still trying to wrestle. So
yeah,
it didn't really seem like The Undertaker did distract him, but The Undertaker was there anyway. Kane gets the stunner. 1, 2, 3. Austin regains the championship. Undertaker gets in the ring, staring at Austin. He takes Paul Bearer at one point. He's staring at Austin. And then as he turns around, Austin ends up giving Undertaker a stunner. As Austin walks off, the brothers are both laying there and they both sit up simultaneously.
And the camera cut away way too quickly because that was a really cool moment where they sit up simultaneously and then the camera's just like on the crowd or something.
Mm-hmm. And I love that Austin flips them off. Like, I'm like, why are you flipping these guys off? Like, they're brothers who are both mental. Why would you want these two to be against you?
Well, like, he is Stone Cold Steve Austin, though. He doesn't always make the smartest decisions when it comes to this. I mean, this is the man who attacked literally everyone in the Royal Rumble.
This is true. I'm curious to get your thoughts. So what did you make of the match, the outcome, the story? A lot went on in 10 minutes, but what did you make of it?
I wish I wouldn't have known the outcome of this match before I saw it, but that said, it didn't really take away from me enjoying it. I think there was an energy to this match from the start, and I was super into it. I much prefer these two in a proper match than the First Blood nonsense that we had at King of the Ring, because I think it just gave them an opportunity to like batter the shit out of each other, and I thought it was great. I didn't really know if Undertaker like added to the match for me. But I guess we're kind of meant to question whether he was going to get involved, given that, I mean, he got involved last night at King of the Ring because he didn't want Kane to set himself on fire. That's off the table now. So really, I mean, Undertaker at this point probably wants Steve Austin to be champion, unless what Vince McMahon says is correct and he's afraid he can't beat Steve Austin or something stupid like that. But, you know, like, Undertaker's probably not super happy with Kane after being set on fire in a casket and all that kind of stuff. Like, there's some contention.
Well, because that's what's good is, like, you know, yeah, Undertaker didn't want to set him on fire and he, you know, helped him win, but doesn't mean he likes him now. Doesn't mean they're friends.
It doesn't mean that they're pals. It doesn't mean that they're just like, they're back together and there's no dissension there. Like, there's still a lot of history that they need to work through. So there are a lot of story wrinkles here, and it's kind of like, you don't really know where it's going to go, and you kind of do want to see how it's going to play out. And like, Kane going to the top rope and doing anything is always very impressive to me. And I don't know. I think Steve Austin and Kane had really good chemistry here. It was bizarre to see Stone Cold Steve Austin win with one stunner. And I mean that in, like, it's a good way, because the stunner is very protected as a finisher, right? But, like, nowadays, for big matches like this, we see people kicking out of finishers. And, I mean, Kane has kicked out of 3 tombstones before, or 2, and then almost the 3rd one, right? So it's just, it was interesting that Stone Cold Steve Austin hits one stunner and beats Kane and is the champion again. And I guess I get it. Like, Stone Cold Steve Austin is the champion that they want to go with, and the title change was just kind of for intrigue and to get people to watch King of the Ring, because they didn't know that Mick Foley was going to fall off and through a cell and nearly die. But yeah, I liked all of this. And I think, I mean, the story between all of them definitely doesn't seem over. Paul Bearer's reactions on the outside to this match were incredible, too. I continue to treasure him. Like, he clutches his heart after near falls, and he looks completely distraught, and, like, he has his hands on his head after Kane loses. Just, like, bless him and his cartoon expressions, right? Because he's just, like, he has his hands on his head, and, like, this is the worst thing that could have possibly happened, and Kane did accept the match, so it's kind of his fault, right? And he lost fair and square. I liked this. I liked this a whole lot. And then, you know, we had the extra attitude thing. It just showed, like, Undertaker and Kane fighting, so it just shows that there is some dissension still between them. And then the Undertaker, like, chokeslams Kane and hits Paul Bearer, and Paul Bearer is on his knees yelling, "No!" like, in a wide camera shot, because it's, like, the worst thing. And I just felt really bad for Kane, actually, because when Kane walks away and walks up the ramp, he just looks really upset, and I am sad and upset for him. Like, he's all hunched over, and Kane is actually a non-Chikara or non-Lucha Underground example of someone I will show. Masked wrestlers can emote very, very well. Like, I disagree with anyone who says that you shouldn't put people in a mask because they can't show emotion. I think Mankind's another one. More of his face is exposed than Kane's. But, like, Kane's body language, he just looks devastated. And you can't see his face. You can't see what his face is doing. But you totally get the emotion from him. And it seems like there's an expression on his masked face, right? And I think that's the sign of a great performer.
Yeah, for sure. When I was watching this back, I almost, like, remembered the feeling of watching this in 1998, and it was such an exciting time to be a WWF fan, because, like, you never knew what was going to happen. You know, somebody could win the WWF title on a pay-per-view, and the next night the title could change again on Raw. It didn't happen all the time, but it was exciting, and it felt must-see, and it's like, you know, Finn and I just covered the last 2 Raws on the PowerSlam podcast. It was like, well, they were kind of both the same episodes. And if you didn't see them, you didn't really miss anything. Whereas if you didn't see this, you missed a lot of new kind of story plots, and you missed a title change.
And the Brawl for All, I mean.
And the Brawl for All. So I think this was the Brawl for All, which, God.
It's so bad.
I also hope that you didn't know the result to this, but, you know, I'm glad it still worked for you, even if you didn't know. It's something that always kind of, even at the time, is difficult for me, and I try my best to ignore it, is that because Austin can never take a tombstone, it kind of takes away from Austin Kane and Austin Undertaker matches for me a little bit.
Yeah, that's true. And I didn't even think of that in the context of this match, though, which I think is good.
Yeah, which shows, you know, that, like, it's maybe working. And I think sometimes they can have good matches, but I think sometimes if you don't have that part of the story to play with, or, you know, if one of them puts Austin up for a tombstone, I know he can't do it. So it's,
yeah,
but it, you know, like you say, it's a testament to them in this match that it didn't really matter and it was still good.
Can Austin even take a chokeslam?
He can take a chokeslam, yeah, he just can't take a tombstone.
Okay, I was wondering if, because that's also neck involved. I mean, I know he can fall on his back, but
I think it's more because the tombstone is direct neck trauma if it's done in any way wrong.
Yeah, because it could compress his neck. That makes sense.
Where would you put your thumb then this week, Sandra, for the night after King of the Ring?
I mean, this is a very tricky episode.
It's a tale of two shows.
A tale of two shows, right? Like, the good stuff is so good and the bad stuff is so bad. I'm so excited for the Brawl for All to have started that it's kind of a positive for me. Like, even though it was Henry Godwin and Bradshaw and I fucking hate them, I'm so excited for the clusterfuck that is the Brawl for All because it's so, so terrible. I think I'm going to give this show a thumbs up. Even though I hated the Dustin Reynolds thing with Dick Togo and Val Venus, and even though Dick Togo and Val Venus was like a good enough match, like I would like to see them wrestle more. Steven Regal debuted, and even though it was nothing and Sable was terrible on commentary, like, I don't know, there's enough on this show that I was excited about, and then some of the really shitty stuff is the kind of shitty stuff that I also get excited about, so I'm gonna give it a thumbs up, weirdly enough, even though I really didn't enjoy watching it.
So next week's show, I'm gonna give it I'm gonna give it a thumbs up as well. The Brawl for All is terrible, but I just like the Undertaker, Kane, and Austin stuff. I think is so good that you really would have had to do something terrible for me to not give this a thumbs up, like, because I just love all that stuff. And I thought the Shamrock stuff was good as well. So I think, like, in terms of like the storylines, everything kind of went forward in the way it should have for the most part. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the thing is, the Dustin Reynolds thing, I don't really even see as a thing, which I guess is why it probably doesn't even bother me that much, because I don't really see it as like a part of the show. I see it as this kind of boring, you know, undercard
side thing.
Yeah. So, but next week, well, actually, it'll be in the next couple of days.
It's this week's.
Is a show. We have a number one contendership match for the WWF title, which is one of my favorite angles of all time from Raw. I love it.
Oh man,
I'm curious to see what you think of it, or if I've talked up here. We see Ken Shamrock facing another former King of the Ring. We see two more Brawl for All matches with Road Warrior Hawk against Droz, and Savio Vega versus Brackus.
Wait, Road Warrior Hawk against Droz?
Yep, and...
Why is he against Droz?
Shut up, Sandra. There's more important things. The other one, Savio Vega faces guess who? Brackus.
What? Brackus is actually coming?
For one show.
I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I don't think he's going to be as exciting as Kurgan, but like... I don't know. Just when was that those Brackus Day vignettes were? Wasn't that like around the time of South Africa Raw?
July 97, yep.
So a year ago.
So, yeah, but next...
Has Brackus done anything? Like, has he been on...
Mayhem in Manchester 1998, that was that.
Yay, that sounds exciting. When was the Mayhem in Manchester? Like, what date was that?
April 4th, 98, just after WrestleMania.
Okay. Yeah, I'm not that sad that I missed out on that one.
There's a lot of stuff that happens next in the next one that we're watching, and I'm pretty curious to see how Sandra feels about a lot. So it should be an interesting episode.
We shall see. I'm going to be watching it probably later today or tomorrow. So
yeah, and we're going to try and cover it maybe on Tuesday. On a flight tomorrow to Madrid, so probably Tuesday. Okay. Yeah, so whose music do you want to play as that, Sandra?
I think... I mean, it seems like we should play Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme. But I would say William Regal's theme, but like his generic music that they used was just stupid and probably we couldn't even find. So I would say we should play Stone Cold Steve Austin's theme because he is once again the World Wrestling Federation champion.
That he is. You can go to patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for the King of the Ring review and much, much more. You can go to youtube.com/InsideTheRopes for an interview with James Storm. It's up there. There'll be more stuff going up this week. A lot of stuff with Triple H and Shawn Michaels that we got, with them talking about Ronda Rousey. One more match for Shawn Michaels and much, much more. Tons of stuff coming up. And you can go to insidetheropes.co.uk/edge for tickets to see the Rated R Superstar coming in September and October. So thanks for listening, everybody. Thanks for all your support. And we'll be back on Tuesday with the up-to-date Retro Raw. Bye.
Bye.